From Southside to the world, and in association with Middlesbrough Library Services, it's the Book of the Month with Jill Appleton.
For October, we have been reading The Fakirs by Chan Koon Chung.
For November's Book of the Month, we decided to give a novel by Geoffrey Archer a try.
This month we have been reading the unusually titled The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society by Mary Ann Schaffer and Annie Barrows. For our January Book of the Month, we have been reading Dark Matter by Michelle Paver.
For February, we have been reading another offering from one of Southside Broadcasting's favourite authors, Ian Lennox.
Our March Book of the Month is Small Island by Andrea Levy.
Book of the Month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse, and every so often, some extremely lovely writers.
This September we have been reading When God Was a Rabbit by Sarah Winman. This is the author's first novel and chronicles the life of Ellie Portman, starting from her early childhood in the 1970s and ending with events relating to the Twin Towers disaster in New York. The book focuses on her close relationship with her brother Joe and her very strange friend Jenny Penny. Another of her close companions is her rabbit, who she calls God.
I decided to enter this world just as my mother got off the bus after an unproductive shopping trip to Ilford. She'd gone to change a pair of trousers and, distracted by my shifting position, found it impossible to choose between patched denims or velvet flares, and fearful that my place of birth would be a department store, she made a staggered journey back to the safe confines of her postcode, where her waters broke just as the heavens opened. And during the 70-yard walk back down to our house, her amniotic fluid mixed with the December rain and spiralled down the gutter until the cycle of life was momentously, and one might say poetically, complete. I was delivered by an off-duty nurse in my parents' bedroom on an eiderdown that had been won in a raffle, and after a swift labour of 22 minutes, my head appeared and the nurse shouted, "Push!" and my father shouted, "Push!" and my mother pushed, and I slipped out effortlessly into that fabled year. The year Paris took to the streets, the year of the Tet Offensive, the year Martin Luther King lost his dream, lost his life for a dream. For months I lived in a quiet world of fulfilled need, cherished and doted on, until the day, that is, that my mother's milk dried up to make way for the flood of grief that suddenly engulfed her when she learnt her parents had died on a walking holiday in Austria. It was in all of the papers. The freak accident that took the life of 27 tourists. A grainy photograph of a mangled coach lodged between two pine trees like a hammock. There was only one survivor of the crash, the German tour guide, who had been trying on a new ski helmet at the time. The thing that obviously had saved his life. And from his hospital bed in Vienna, he looked into the television camera as another dose of morphine was administered and said that, although it was a tragic accident, they had just eaten, so they died happy. Obviously, the trauma of plummeting down the rocky crevasse had obliterated his memory. Or maybe a full stomach of dumplings and strudel had softened the blow. That is something we would never know. But the television camera stayed on his bruised face, hoping for a moment of sensitive lucidity for the heartbroken families back home, but it never came. My mother remained grief-stricken for the whole of my second year and well into my third. She had no stories to recall, no walking stories or funny first words, those events that give clues to the child that might become. The everyday was a blur, a foggy window she had no interest in wiping clear. "What's going on?" sang Marvin Gaye, but no one had an answer.
This book spans four decades, beginning in suburban Essex, where Ellie lives with her loving but slightly unconventional parents, and is where she meets her best friend Jenny, who comes from a completely different family background. When Ellie's parents win the football pools, the family relocate to Cornwall, where they set up a bed and breakfast. It is here that Arthur, who knows exactly how and when he is going to die, comes into their lives, closely followed by friend Ginger, a Shirley Bassey impersonator.
11th of March, 1996. "I was so happy to get another letter from you, Ellie. I know we're back in contact, but it's hard for me to trust. I have to pinch myself." The Christmas we disappeared is still as clear to me as yesterday. We left as soon as Uncle Phil came back from the Red House and fell asleep, and we took the car to an abandoned car park where Mum had booked a minicab. Everything was about covering our tracks, you see. Mum had been advised by a women's refuge in Liverpool, and they told her what to do. We stayed a couple of nights in a small hotel in Euston, I think, before taking the train up north. We lived in the refuge till Mum got back on her feet. We couldn't call from there or let anyone know the address, something about endangering the others. That's why you never heard from me. Even when we got our own place, Mum said our previous life was dead. I had to forget all about it. About you. About all that had happened to her. She was so frightened. What she'd turned into, no one should turn into, and I couldn't tell anyone. I called you once. One Christmas, about 10 years ago. At the end of the day, like we used to, you said hello and I heard laughter. I put the phone down. I think it hurts you much. Hearing what I was once part of, what I could have been, could have had. I did get married. It wasn't a happy marriage, although at first I thought it was. I thought it would give me everything I missed, or that my mum missed, and that's all I can say, really. I don't know if you believe in destiny, but I know he was mine. I looked up. Ginger was singing loudly and had managed most of the words, even though she seemed to make up a few of her own in the third verse. I'd love to read Arthur's book when you've finished editing it, also any articles you've written for magazines. I've got plenty of time to read, you see. I worked in the kitchen here and it's quite good. Before I came here, I used to have a company called The Tranquil Path, just me and a girl called Linda. I did tarot reading and massage mainly, aromatherapy, intuitive, even Indian head massage. I got quite good, quite successful. Funny how life turns out. Oh, Ellie, this feels so good writing to you again. I'm trying to forgive myself for what I've done, and it's proving the hardest thing for me to do. I'm down to serve 9 years at the moment. They say I'll probably get out before with good behaviour. I should have got less. Everyone said so, even the police. They didn't think it was murder.
I found this book amusing, but also touching, sad and serious. I thought the relationship between Ellie and Joe was lovely. In fact, I liked all the family, including the glamorous Auntie Nancy, who had a crush on Ellie's mother. The book is written in two parts. The first has an innocent charm about it, as it is written by Ellie as a child. The second half is a lot more serious. Ellie is now a journalist, Joe is living in New York, and Jenny Penny is in prison. I didn't enjoy this part as much, as Ellie seemed to have lost her sparkle, wishing she could go back to the old days. I also thought there was a bit too much crammed into one book, what with child abuse, homosexuality, kidnap, depression, domestic abuse, illness and murder, not to mention the attack on the Twin Towers. I did, however, like the author's style of writing, and it did make me laugh out loud. Therefore, despite the amount of bad things that come into the Portman's lives, this is still an enjoyable book, and I will be looking out for more books by this author.
Book of the Month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse. And every so often, some extremely lovely writers.
Business announcement. How confident are you in your first aider's ability to save your life? Is it A, very, B, mostly, or C, not at all? Sending your staff on a first aid course doesn't mean they can save your life in an emergency. Life aid training can give you the confidence and ability in a crisis situation. It could mean the difference between life and death. Visit lifeaidtraining.co.uk for more information and help your staff save lives.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
Book of the Month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse, and every so often, some extremely lovely writers.
Primarily due to the fact that we had to rearrange books and various other bits and pieces. Jill Prowse not with us today, neither indeed is Kayleigh Carr, because we cunningly actually moved the date of the programme, did we not, Jill Appleton, 7 days earlier. You know, 168 hours earlier, just to keep people on the hop, basically, you know, in case they thought, oh, I've got 7 days. No, we've just moved the goalposts. Speaking of goalposts, time for the editor of Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast and the fanzine, of course, and Mr. Middlesbrough, an ace musician, of course, as we know. Not wearing his horse's head today, Rob Nichols, to be back with us. Good to see you, Rob. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
Fresh from the Revy Clough Walk, which is already online. People can listen to that, and you can actually find that an FM TTM audio special that we were taking with another top author, really.
You've got to call him Revy. Revy is the middle.
You see, it's interesting because obviously both sides of things there. But I, you know, in justification, I tend to think, well, Clough referred to Tomaszewski as a clown. So
yes.
Sorry, we're talking football. We should be talking about When God Was a Rabbit.
Yes.
Sarah Widman, what did you make of it, Rob?
Well, I've got a mission to. I haven't actually finished it yet, and just listening to what Jill's just said, obviously an awful lot happened in the second half. and so it changes quite a lot. I've gone through the childhood, and I'm part of the way through the Cornish years. And the first bit of the book I found it was really, really good. Really enjoyed the author looking through the child's eyes, and so that mixture of the mundane and the sort of magical and both things side by side, and some really, really funny parts as well. Really light, typical sort of childlike black humour as well. But, you know, quite intriguing because in many ways a normal family, but then not at all normal, but perhaps there isn't any such thing. And really good book.
Yeah. 50p piece. Something which was bemusing me. It's the opening sequence that we actually had where the magic trick of a 50p piece is actually poked out of the skin like a staple. I couldn't work out what the significance of that was at all.
It comes halfway through the book as well, doesn't it? Jenny Penny gets a 50 pence piece out of her arm. She pulls it out of her arm.
Why, though? I mean,
because she can do like magical things, can't she?
Yeah, yeah.
She can play piano without having, she touches the keyboards and she plays the piano like she's a genius.
And also I felt that obviously anthropomorphism notwithstanding, the talking rabbit and other bits and pieces who gets run over. Spoiler alert! Sorry, don't worry. Belated spoiler alert, as our colleagues over the Atlantic would say. Did that work for you? Because I just felt somehow John Connolly did it slightly better with the Book of Lost Things when we were talking about childhood activities and various other factors. But maybe am I doing too pernickety? Am I being too pernickety there, Rob?
Quite pretty different books, aren't they, I think? I think this is maybe like a child taking these things for granted in a way that why shouldn't a rabbit talk and why shouldn't you keep it secret, and why shouldn't somebody be able to pull something out, 50 pence out of the ram? It happens.
Unless you could actually say there's a metaphor for 50p out of the arm winning the football pools.
Ooh.
That's maybe. Just sort of, that could be a line where we came there, because clearly the main protagonist's parents, we have the agony of the lawyer, father, just as well Charles Arthur isn't around perhaps, really, but so it would be interesting to get the sort of legal aspect on that particular basis, one of our celebrity legal folk there. That sort of guilt that he went through in terms of defending somebody who effectively was guilty. And then what for me was an interesting part where they win the pools, he gets the Mercedes, the major car, etc., and of course his wife says, well, either the car goes or I do. And then there's the let's get a guest house sorted out. I mean, there was an awful lot packed into that whole period, from sort of being, you know, a middle class suburban family to, you know, the football pool scenario, all of the other issues that work there. We haven't even mentioned the relationship between Jenny's brother and... Oh, it's not Jenny's brother. It's...
Ellie's brother.
Ellie's brother.
Ellie's brother.
Exactly. Ellie's brother. And the guy who ends
Charlie.
Up... Exactly.
Charlie,
yeah. Being kidnapped and going through all sorts of things. And don't get me started on what happens to poor Orinoco.
don't even go there.
Exactly. So...
There's a lot... there is an awful lot going on.
I mean, you wouldn't even get that in the old days at the Hullgate, would you? You know,
no.
it just wouldn't. You know, it's a certain thing. Standards would actually be there, but... And as you rightly said, Jill, you know, that line, who is Orinoco? He didn't even know, you know, after all that. Without giving too much away as well, I found the aftermath of 9/11, whereas I think... Sarah Winman did a wonderful way of seeing how the world events kind of contextualised the whole piece that she was working with and the narrative and the structures. I did feel that when we got to, again, the survival of the brother, that maybe stretched credibility a little bit from that point of view. And obviously the passionate belief that he was still alive and the, of course, bringing in Jenny Penny once again and her tarot readings that he was alive and the Twin Towers and all of those areas. A lot in this book. I mean, it's not difficult to read. It's well written from that point of view. It's, I would say, a two-nighter, really, if you're looking at it. 300 and odd pages from that point of view.
Must be a quick reader.
Jill, I mean, would you like to add anything to yourself?
Yeah.
I mean,
I really like the characters in the book. I like the family. I liked Arthur and Ginger. There was some...
Nancy,
I liked everybody, really. I thought everyone, they were all very likable, the characters, apart from the next door neighbour. And I thought there were some really funny bits in, which I enjoyed.
I was
a bit disappointed with the second half, though. It just seemed to be, I liked the way Ellie was telling the story as a child, and then when she grew up, she just seemed too serious then.
Could that be seen as a sort of way of sometimes we're disappointed when we get to adulthood, or we think, well, you know, it's nothing like the brochure?
Well, maybe it is.
I mean, I'm just interested in terms of reading the inspiration for When God Was a Rabbit, although not autobiographical. I wanted this book to have the feel of a memoir textured by real moments and real places of my childhood. I'm referring to Sarah Winman's childhood there. I mean, obviously writing, as one would often say, is the best practice from your own experience. Interesting.
Yeah.
A lot of things packed into that whole system.
There was. But I think if she writes another book, I'll have another read. And
I'm sure.
Give it a try.
Good Housekeeping said mesmerising, and The Guardian sharply funny, whimsical and innovative. Solid for that. Book about a brother and sister, book about childhood and growing up. Again, I'd probably say I preferred One Day if you're talking about that sort of time-jumping setups that were around there. But never mind. Who knows? Surprises could come through in terms of the whole thing. That certainly seems to have polarised some of our other contributors, some of who have actually read the book in times past. Thanks to Jodie Orton for the readings in this particular instance. There are sort of reflections of Jenny Penny, the letter from Jenny Penny, and, of course, the earlier sort of youthful memoirs and thoughts of Ellie. So, Rob, scores on the doors. What are you going to do? Where are you going to go?
Bearing in mind I haven't read it all, but from what I've read, I've got to give it 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10. Did I not predict that, Jill?
Yeah.
You know, in the pre-show piece, on the basis of the discussion we'd actually had, you know, I kind of felt he was actually going to that.
It's a very upbeat, optimistic guy. Everything's good in his life. I'm going to give it a 7.
And actually, for this once, I think I'm going 7.5.
Oh, all right.
So, you know, it's... try it. take the thing aloud from that point of view. I appreciate the Times. Beautifully true, a superb debut. Well written, as I mentioned. Maybe a little bit too much packed in without necessarily exploring that, although I think maybe the 50p piece was actually the finance and the magical things that actually were there, and the talking rabbit also being, you know, intriguingly sort of close to all sorts of things. Maybe it's just the imaginary friend. What's next for the October text? It's
one of our previous
friends. Yes,
authors,
good authors.
Marina Priorato.
Indeed. One of the early sort of folk who actually
took part. We haven't read one of hers for a while, so...
Far too long. She's actually had two books written in the time we actually sort of last featured her, so we will work through that routine. And the title of Marina Priorato's text for next time is?
The Daughter of Siena, I think. Mm.
That's The Daughter of Siena, not Miller, in case people were getting confused. So presumably, again, we're talking about another medieval Italian-based...
Yes.
Romance. Yeah. Very good. Excellent.
Should be good.
Fantastic. So don't forget, of course, you can listen to this show and heaps of other books of the month by going to southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com, where you can find out all sorts of other bits and pieces. We were speaking earlier, Rob, about the Don Reavy walk. And obviously Marina's online at present, and of course Brian Clough. I was actually chatting to some Leeds United supporters who were actually on the walk with me. Interesting, really? I sort of managed to liaise with them. Said, yeah, they only came because of the Leeds United supporters, and even mentioned Gary Sprake. You won't know these names, Jill, but you know, to those of us who were around or historically at the time, I found it quite fascinating. But this actually is part of a book that may actually be suggested as a future book of the month, because I don't think, Rob, we've actually had many sports books, if any, Jill, in the 4.5 years we've actually been doing these particular shows. So, I mean, I appreciate sometimes there's bias that comes through in this particular basis, but, you know, I mean, Rob's written one, you know, there's that co-presenter, but this particular text was written by Roger Peniston and...
Roger Hermiston.
Hermiston, thank you, yes. Roger Hermiston, and it's, what is it all about? Why should we possibly consider this as a future?
It's about three things, about three characters, personalities, really. Brian Clough and Don Reavy, and a lot of people will have either read or seen the film Damned United. And he's talking a lot about the two because he's intrigued by the fact that they both came from, well, it's about 20 minutes walk from each other's houses. They both came from Middlesbrough, I think about 7 or 8 years difference, but that they should turn out to be such adversaries and such different personalities, but should have such a big effect on football. And outside of football, they were big TV personalities in many ways, and they both came from Middlesbrough. And the book charts their early childhoods in Middlesbrough, but also talks about what the town was like then. We go back to Reavy's born in 1927, I think. He's born in the country's racked by... depression, recession, whatever.
Situation normal, then?
Yeah. But Reavy lives on one side of the town where it's street houses. His school is still there, Archibald School, and his family goes through a lot of struggles. His father's often out of work. His mother dies quite when he's quite young, so he knows that he's living on the edge all the time. He gets sent off from school to work when he's 14, because they need the money. Whereas Brian Clough's in a house where his father's a manager of a sweet shop, and he lives in a newfangled council house, that, you know, it's a posh end of town. But they're so close to each other. So it's quite an intriguing book because it tells a lot about the life and times of Middlesbrough, as well as, and so many people will, if they're not themselves, their parents would have lived, you know, and know the Cloughs, or maybe known the Reavies, or known the schools, Archibald School and Martin Grove School. So it's I think it's a great story of national interest, but very strong
local. I think
you've
sold
interest.
It to us, Rob. What's it called?
It's called Clough and Reavy.
Yes, you see, there
are. Well,
do you think we can look at a review of that in future? Yeah. Just, you know, we love Marina Priorato, don't get me wrong, I think she's a fantastic individual, we'll work through that, but, you know, we've done horse racing in Siena, and we will be doing
that. It's only fair that I let you guys have a say.
Well, there you go. To Rob Nichols, to Jill Appleton, many thanks, and to you, dear listener, keep on keeping on, and why not, if you've been confused, just play it all again and find out all the other magical things. Can we say bye-bye?
Bye.
Bye.
Book of the Month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse, and every so often, some extremely lovely writers.